The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good morning. Welcome to Age-Wise Living with Barbara Friesner. Barbara is here to keep you educated on elder care issues. She will give you the information you need to help your aging loved one and yourself. Now here is your host, Barbara Friesner.
Good morning and welcome to Age-Wise Living, and thanks so much for joining us today. I'm so delighted to be here and to have all of you here too. I'm your host, Barbara Friesner, and I am a generational coach. And I got into the elder care biz the way a lot of people do, because of personal experience. I've been a care manager now for more than 25 years, first for my grandmother for many years, and now for the past 17 years for my mother, who has severe advanced dementia. Initially, as I helped my grandmother, especially my mother, I muddled my way through by trial and error. But through lots of research and talking with a lot of people, I came up with the information I needed. 9 years ago, I started my company, Age-Wise Living, and became a generational coach to help other caregivers so they won't have to put in the time and stress and expense of trial and error. As a generational coach, I work with family members, always the family, never the senior, and I help the families determine the right solution. And more importantly, I think anyway, I help the family communicate with their aging loved one so their aging loved one will actually do what is in their best interest, which, as any of you who have tried to do this knows, that's probably the hardest part. And since all generational coaching is by phone, I work with families all over the world. I'm also an adjunct professor at Cornell University, where I teach senior housing management, the author of The Ultimate Caregiver's Success Guide. I write a weekly newsletter with lots of great articles about issues affecting seniors and their families. I write a monthly column for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. I'm a speaker and seminar leader, and I have this show, Age-Wise Living, because it's my mission to help family members help their aging loved ones resolve their elder care issues by choice, not crisis. And that's why the focus of Age-Wise Living is to bring you information on really important and interesting topics to save you time and money and stress so you can resolve your elder care issues by choice and not crisis. And that's why I'm so delighted to have with us today Yale Hauptmann. Hi, Yale. Welcome.
Thank you, Barbara. I want to thank you very much for inviting me on to chat with you today.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. Yale is a graduate of Rutgers College and Albany Law School. He served for a year as law clerk to the Honorable John C. Streithoff of the Superior Court of New Jersey and has been in private practice since 1990. He first worked for two general practice law firms before founding Hauptmann & Hauptmann in 1995. And he practices law with his wife and law partner, Lori, thus the Hauptmann & Hauptmann. And they devote their time exclusively to the field of elder and disability law. Yale is a member of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys and the New Jersey Bar Association's Elder Law Section. He's a frequent author and lecturer on elder law topics and is also the host of his own Elder Law Today, which is a podcast, an audio podcast in the format of a radio show that addresses topical elder law issues, which can be found at www.elderlawtodaypodcast.com. And by the way, Yale's law firm website can be found at www.hauptmannlaw.com. So again, welcome, Yale. I'm just thrilled to have you here.
Thanks, Barbara. I'm looking forward to our little chat.
Well, let's start with some really basic questions because these are the ones that I often hear. First one is, what is elder law?
Okay. Well, you know, surprisingly, even in today with the aging of our population, I still run into a lot of folks who really haven't heard of elder law. Basically, a general description I would say is it can be best described as those areas of the law that most affect the lives of the elderly, and that can encompass or does encompass estate planning, probate administration, nursing home law, Medicaid planning, disability planning, guardianships, conservatorships, issues with Medicare. A lot of it focuses on the aging process and needing increased care and the maze of laws and benefits that we have in this country that we call the long-term care system.
Okay, now, couldn't I go to my family law attorney to handle these legal issues?
Well, you could, but probably your family attorney, and we see a lot of folks, and we get a lot of referrals from those family attorneys. So perhaps you've had an attorney that handled the real estate closing for you, maybe even did your wills. But when you get into issues of long term care, which we'll talk about during our conversation this morning. You see that it's very specialized, and there's a lot of information, a lot of questions, and most attorneys, unless you really devote your time to it, it's too complicated. And so it's best to focus on and deal with, work with somebody who really addresses those specific concerns. Just as, if you had an issue, let's say a personal injury claim, you probably want to go to somebody who just specializes in that, not the attorney that perhaps did your will or handled your real estate closing.
Right. Absolutely. Now, is there a certain age when it's elder law? Do you have to be a certain age or at a point in time?
No, not really, Barbara. It really depends on the person. Depends on the scenario, but if I were to generalize, I'd say that once you start to reach the age of retirement or you're close to the age of retirement, you're probably a good candidate, and you probably need to address those issues. But a lot of times, what we do is we see most of the times the children are the ones that contact us for their parents. As you work with the children and the families of the elderly loved one, we typically do as well, and so we'll see those folks come in to talk about their parents, and then a lot of those children are in their 50s and 60s, and typically they'll say to us, "Well, BJ, I don't want to be in the same situation leaving my kids with all these issues. When's the appropriate time for us to sit down?" And a lot of times, they're already at that point, so they're in their, 50s and 60s, and so that's probably, if I were to generalize, it's probably a good time.
Right, and I absolutely agree, because I know how difficult it is when you wait too long, which I want to ask you about later. I have another question for you, though. If kids come in with their parents, or kids are the ones who call you first,
right,
and then they come in with the parent, who is your client?
Excellent question, Barbara. I would say 99.9% of the time, the parent or the parents are our clients. Although, especially when the parents are at advanced age and really need a lot of assistance, we work with the children. But we do that not working with the children individually, but working with them in their capacity as representative of their parents. So typically it would be under a power of attorney and such. So there are inherent conflicts, potential conflicts of interest, because the children's interests are not always the same as the parent. So we have to be very careful and make it clear to the family that our primary objective is to do what is best for the parent. Now, to the extent that that may also benefit the children, because that's what the parents want, we, you know, for example, in terms of inheritance and protecting assets and such, most parents want to leave a legacy to their children, but our primary concern, first and foremost, is to make sure that they're able to get the best care that they can get, and so their assets, first and foremost, must be protected for that.
Okay. And when they come in, when anybody comes in, are there certain documents that everybody should have, like a will?
Yeah. Well, you know, Barbara, what happens a lot of times is when people first call us, a lot of times the first conversation or the first topic is, well, I need to change my will, or mom or dad don't have a will, or it's old and it needs to be updated. And my answer is, okay, you know, we can address that, and it's important. But I have to tell you, for the parents, for the seniors, probably the most important documents are the power of attorney and the health care directive. It's not that the will isn't important. It is, and it, you know, it's important in the case of a married couple to provide for the surviving spouse. But let's say in the case of a single parent, that will provides how assets are to be passed to the next generation. And while that is important to the parent because that's an objective the parent wants to accomplish, it doesn't solve their problems, their long-term care problems. And those issues are more important to them while they're still here on this earth. Mm-hmm. And so the power of attorney and the health care directive are just as important, and those are the documents, along with the will, that everybody should have.
Mm-hmm. So that they have it, and so that, and also the living will and the healthcare proxy, and they're called different things in different states. But
right.
Living
we can,
will and healthcare proxy. So if they can't, if they have health issues, somebody can speak for them and take care of them while they're still alive.
Right. And I know that we're going out, you know, all around the country, and in fact, all around the world. So a lot of this terminology is different. But basically, if I can give you an overview and your listeners an overview, a power of attorney.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to cut you off right there.
Okay.
Let's take a break, and then we'll have you do that when we get back.
That's great.
Okay, we're going to take a stop for a short break right now. This is Barbara Friesner, and you're listening to Age Wise Living. And our guest today is Yale Hauptman. And when we come back, he will be answering that question and more elder law questions. So if you'd like to sign up for Yale's blog, Yale, how can they do that?
Well, you can go to www.elderlawtodaypodcast.com. It's all one word, and you can sign up to get our notices, email notices about new posts. You can also find us at hauptmanlaw.com as well.
Terrific. Okay, I think we are.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com, to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and founder of Rock and Roll Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to the Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time here on News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts, but this isn't about cold statistics. It's about saving kids.
Shaniqua, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. When an alert is issued in your area, you'll receive it as a free text message. Wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Agewise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, welcome back to Agewise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we are talking with Yale Houtman, and he's answering all kinds of elder law questions. And before we went to the break, you were talking, Yale, about healthcare directives,
right,
and that sort of thing. So why don't we pick up back there?
Okay.
I know,
okay,
that's an important topic.
So, Barbara, you threw out a couple of terms. I think proxy directive and living will, and it's a good opportunity for me to explain, because we are, I understand, going out over the internet, and it's not limited to my area of practice here in New Jersey, but there are a lot of different terms used to talk about healthcare directives specifically and powers of attorney. And let me explain what they are. Basically, when people talk about a power of attorney, they usually mean a financial power of attorney or a general durable power of attorney. And that means that you are designating somebody to make decisions for you. They tend to be financial. So it could be writing checks from your checking account, moving money from one account to another, talking to your credit card companies, paying your bills.
Yeah, which is really important, because if they are unable to speak for themselves, then they may not be able to take care of their bills. It would be terrible to lose their,
right,
their home because nobody could write the check.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And then you've got also that decision-making ability on the medical side. And so you might hear terms like healthcare power of attorney or proxy directive or living will. And they all are types of what are called, or what we call here in New Jersey, healthcare directives, are sometimes referred to as advanced directives. So, for example, a living will is an instruction directive. It is a document that provides that in certain scenarios, I do or do not want certain types of treatment to be administered. Typically, that's an end-of-life decision, but it doesn't have to be limited to that. So, for example, if I'm in a permanent vegetative state, I do or do not want to be kept alive by artificial means. There's also a healthcare power of attorney. So you're designating somebody to make financial decisions for you if you can't make them yourself.
You mean healthcare decisions?
Healthcare decisions, exactly. And in New Jersey, we have a combined directive. So that is the living will aspect that says, for example, I don't want to be kept alive by artificial means if I'm brain dead, for example. But also, since I cannot create a document that's going to cover every possible medical decision that might be presented, I need somebody to make those decisions for me if I can't make them. So there's the healthcare power of attorney that covers all those other situations that we can't specifically put in a document says, in this situation I want this done, or in that situation I want that done. So that's where we come up with a combined directive. And those are very, very important documents to have. And so many times I see folks who say, well, you know, when I get to that point, you know, I have one done, and I'll appoint my son or my daughter.
Yeah.
Problem, obviously, Barbara, is, well, if you knew when that point was, let us all in on that secret, because you don't know when that situation arises, and if you can't make that decision and you're waiting to that point in time to appoint somebody, well, obviously, you're not going to be able to sign that document at that point, and you have no buddy who's authorized, and then you get into a guardianship situation, which we can talk about as well, which is something generally for most folks you want to avoid. And
Yeah. You
end up in that situation because of poor planning.
Yeah. So those are really important documents, because that's why you're, and the way to present it to the senior is that's why you're still alive, you know, while the
right.
will we can all deal with later, but the, you know, these are while you're still alive. What do you want to have happen?
And, so. And by the way, you really ought to be updating them. I tell folks that you probably want to update them at least every 5 years. Sometimes the laws change. For example, we see a lot of healthcare directives that are older than the HIPAA authorization laws. If you'll recall a few years back, it's probably about 6 years now, Congress stepped in and passed some laws because people were, rightfully so, they were upset that medical information was being too freely released.
Mm-hmm.
So Congress stepped in and said, okay, before anybody, doctor, employer, what have you, releases any medical information about you, they have to have an authorization signed by you with specific magic language that comes right out of that law. And the problem that we see is if we have a healthcare directive, rather, that predates the law or just doesn't have that authorization in it, as crazy as it may seem, if I am the healthcare representative able to make medical decisions for you, and so you're in surgery and the doctors come out and say, okay, Yale, we need you to make a decision. And I say, well, can you give me some medical information, that I can make an informed decision? Can you give me some information about Barbara's medical condition? Without an authorization, they very well may say, sorry, we can't do that. And the reason why is because there are penalties in that law for not getting an authorization before releasing that information. And so a lot of medical providers are afraid that they're going to get sued or going to get a slap with a penalty, which I think is really not the case. But we do have situations where clients will tell us, you know what, the doctor won't give us the information. So we want to make sure that we have that authorization right in the document itself. So it's really, you know, a lot of folks say, well, you know, I got one at the drugstore. I got a form of power of attorney or healthcare directive. And, the danger in doing that is it will not be tailored to your particular needs and won't have everything in it that you need. And the other, you know, situation is I tell people this specifically, for example, with the HIPAA, and people say, well, I've never had a problem. I've used mom or dad's document, never had a problem. And my answer to that is that's great. But, you know, if you use it 100 times and the first 99 times it works and then the 100th time, you know, the doctor says, well, sorry, we need an authorization, well, what are you going to do then? It's not really helpful that the other times it works, you know, you need it to work exactly when you need it.
Absolutely. I guess I need to go and make sure that mine is updated.
All right.
A big question, a big issue that I'm sure you see and deal with frequently, you mentioned earlier, and that is long-term care.
Right.
So is this what you're talking about when you're talking about long-term care?
It's part of it, yeah. Yeah.
What else is in there?
It starts with the documents. But, you know, Barbara, I get questions a lot. Isn't what you do estate planning? And I explain to people that estate planning is part of what I do, but it is so much more. And the way I explain that is, estate planning deals with what happens when I die. So you have a will, you have an estate plan, and generally the issues are I have this amount of assets that I've accumulated over my lifetime, and I want to pass them on to my loved ones in the manner that I want to make sure that that my family is supported, and I want to do it in a tax-efficient manner. But what happens is the big assumption there is that when I die, I will have those assets. And in today's world, you really can't make that assumption anymore, especially as we're living longer. And so the easy way I explain, going back to your first question of what is elder law, it addresses the question, what happens if I don't die, meaning I live and I live an extended period of time needing long-term care, which is quite expensive, so that I might have a great will that sets everything up, you know, beautifully, but there's no guarantee that I'm going to have those assets, and I might not have to spend $100,000 or more a year, especially in my area of where I practice here in New Jersey in the Northeast. It's quite expensive.
Yeah.
And so you could really eat up your assets in long-term care. And so that is really a large part of what I do.
Is that where you get into the Medicare planning, Medicaid planning?
Medicaid planning, yeah. And, you know, one of the things, the first things that I oftentimes have to explain to folks is what's the difference between Medicare and Medicaid?
And we're actually next week going to have somebody on the show who's going to go into all the details about Medicare. So
Right. Medicare does not, I'll just tell you what it doesn't cover, is it doesn't cover long-term care. It doesn't cover custodial care. It will cover skilled care, but only for a very short period of time, a maximum of 100 days. So when you talk about somebody who's in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and let's say goes to the hospital, breaks a hip, for example, goes to the hospital, and the hospital treats that person. Well, if you or I had that injury, we'd probably go home and rehab at home. But for that 80 or 90-year-old person, their recuperative abilities are not what, you know, a 30 or 40 or 50-year-old is. So they have to go to typically a subacute facility in a nursing home. And they might get some rehabilitation. But after a certain point in time where that rehab stops, then you get into custodial care.
And what we're going to do right now, because this is an important topic and I want to pick that up when we come back, right now we're going to stop here for a short break. This is Barbara Friesner, and you're listening to Age Wise Living. Our guest today is Yale Hauptman, and when we come back, he'll be answering more elder law questions, including the one we just discussed. If you'd like to sign up for Yale's blog, go to www.elderlawtodaypodcast.com. And if you'd like to know more about me and generational coaching, please go to my website, which is agewiseliving.com. And while you're there, please sign up for my weekly newsletter. And by the way, I'd love to hear from you. So please do email me with any comments, questions, or suggestions at barbara@agewiseliving.com. So with that, we will be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
If you want to put the pep back in your step, Chad Lafferty's has just what you're looking for. Dance is life. Life is dance.
It's only about dance.
It's about moving through life with style, gaining awareness of the never-ending, ever-flowing movement that accompanies all of life's activities. Dance is life. Life is dance. Broadcast every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Radio Network. Be sure to tune in and tap into the limitless healing that dance can provide.
Can't stop now.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, and welcome back to AgeWise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we are talking with Yale Hauptmann, and he's answering all kinds of elder law questions. And if you'd like him to answer one of yours, remind you to, yes, please do call us toll-free at 866-472-5788. And before we went to the break, Yale, you were talking about Medicaid planning.
Right, right.
So let's pick up there.
Explaining that Medicaid, or Medicare, I should say, doesn't cover custodial care, which is the reason most folks are in a nursing home long-term.
Mm-hmm.
And so a large part of what we do is we help families plan for that because it can be quite expensive. And it for a lot of folks, they can run out of money. And so if they run out of money, then they generally run out of options and lose the ability to choose where they're going to, their loved one is going to get that care.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they lose the ability to get it at home because, as I said earlier, the long-term care system in this country is really a maze. It's a patchwork of benefits programs and laws. And without any sort of planning, it becomes very difficult to navigate through that maze.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a large part of what we do is helping folks plan for that.
And to set it up so that they can stay at their, in their own home, how is there a way that you can help them stay at home and not have to go to the nursing home?
Yes, yeah. And here's the way I explain it, Barbara, is that if you look at, and I have to tell your audience that what I'm telling you really is based on New Jersey law, okay, because that's where I practice. And so there are some similarities from state to state, but there are a lot of differences based on benefit programs, based on how they are administered, because Medicaid, which is the primary, not the sole program, but the primary program that provides for long-term care, is really a combination of a federal and state program. There are some basic rules that Congress passed, and Congress allots money to each of the states. But these Medicaid programs are administered on a state on the state level by the states, and there's really no oversight from the federal government once they give the money to the states. So there's a lot of differences, and I would caution folks and urge people to contact somebody, an experienced attorney in their state, to work with them in terms of the areas that I'm talking about. But what happens is there really is not any benefit program that will pay for 100% of your nursing home level care if you want it at home, okay? Mm-hmm. And again, there might be a state, I don't think so, but there might be a state out there that has a program. I know in my state there isn't. So, for example, if I need round-the-clock nursing home care and I don't have the money to pay for it, I can qualify for Medicaid benefits to pay for some of that care at home. But if I need round-the-clock, 24/7 care, the only way the government will pay for 100% of it is if I am in a nursing home. And that's the last place that most folks want to be.
Right.
So that's where the planning comes in. Because these are all needs-based benefits, okay? Meaning that I have to be below a certain level of assets to qualify for these benefits, which is different than Medicare, which is an entitlement program where you get Medicare based on your age, if you're over 65, or if you've been deemed permanently and totally disabled. It has nothing to do with the level of assets or income you have. That's a huge difference with Medicaid. So if I run out of money and I qualify, for example, for Medicaid, well, where am I going to come up with the rest of the money to pay for my care at home? Mm-hmm. So that's where the planning comes in. What we do is if we can do it, and typically we have to do it years in advance because there are waiting periods, there are look-back periods and penalties when we talk about Medicaid, we want to put the assets somewhere where they're available to the senior, to the elderly person, but they're not counted as that person. So we can tap into some of the benefits to help pay for the cost of that care, but yet those assets are still sitting somewhere, and where they're sitting is in a trust, but we're able to pull those assets out to help pay for the care, the cost of the care that the government doesn't provide. And that helps to keep your loved one out of a nursing home and in their own home for as long as possible. And for a lot of folks, they may never have to go into a nursing home.
If they plan right, exactly.
If they plan right.
Now, what about, go ahead.
No, that's all right, go ahead.
What about the family that doesn't plan ahead? And then they wait to call you, and their loved one is already in a nursing home. Now, is there anything that you can do to help at that point after it's sort of too late? Or is it too late?
Well, increasingly, there usually is something that we can do. And again, this is going to vary. Specifically, what can be done varies greatly from state to state. Because, as I said, these programs are administered on a statewide level, and you'd be surprised there are a lot of differences between what one state will do versus another. But I always tell people there is usually something that we can do to help folks, even if their loved one is in a nursing home. Now, sometimes we can't if, for example, I got a call last week from somebody who brought Dad into her home after Mom died, and the plan was for Dad to live in her home for the rest of his life. And at the same time, Dad gifted about $150,000 to his two daughters, and they spent the money. Well, things didn't work out very well, and Dad's health deteriorated quite rapidly. And she called me and said, "Look, I can't do this anymore. Dad's he needs nursing home care, and can I get him on Medicaid because he really doesn't have much money left?" The reason was because he gifted it all to his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer was, "Well, the first thing you're gonna have to do is you have to bring the money back, and you're gonna have to spend that money down for his care." And the answer was, "Well, we spent the money; it's gone." And in that case, without bringing that money back, there really isn't much we can do. But short of that, there generally are some things that we can do to help folks. and make sure that when the time comes to apply for benefits, that they are in fact going to be eligible, because it is not easy to qualify for these benefits, especially in today's economy. Because when you think about it, Barbara, in terms of what's going on in the country, there are huge budget deficits that states are running, and Medicaid is probably, for most states, the biggest single expense. And when you consider that there are 77 million baby boomers, I'm the youngest of that generation, but the oldest are turning 65 in about a year and a half. They're starting to turn 65. So you talk about all those folks that are going to be going through that system. The government is not prepared to handle this influx of people into the long-term care system. So there's going to be less money available, and more people are going to be looking for these benefits, what I call the perfect storm here that is brewing. And so you want to make sure that you get to the front of the line, and the way to do that is to make sure well before you may need those benefits to understand what the rules are. Because so often we see folks who make decisions and conduct transactions and such that will affect their eligibility years later, that
right,
they were clueless about because they weren't thinking about long-term care when they made those decisions. But they can absolutely impact their eligibility. And when your money's gone and you need the care and the government tells you, sorry, you're not eligible, now what are you going to do? It's going to fall back onto the families, and a lot of families are going to have to pull together, whether it means bringing mom or dad home or coming up with the money out of their own pockets. This is what, you know, we're faced with in this country, and it's just going to pick up speed, if you will, and increasingly occur.
Now, and they had already spent the money, and so in the short time that we have, how long do they have to wait to spend the money? I mean, it sounds as if they spent it right away, but how long do they have with it sitting, I guess, in escrow or in a different account before they can safely feel they can spend it?
It depends. It depends on, you're talking about my example, the caller that I received that
they already
that
spent
gifted the money.
Yeah.
The Medicaid, for example, the Medicaid rules, there, if you transfer money out of your name, there's a period that you're not eligible for benefits. And it's dependent upon how much money you transfer. So the more money you transfer, the longer the penalty period. But also, the question is, when does that period start? And about 3.5 years ago, the laws changed significantly.
And we're gonna stop there for a moment. We're gonna go to a short break. This is such an important topic, so I'm really glad you're covering it. We'll pick it up there when we come back. This is Barbara Friesner, and you are listening to AgeWise Living. Our guest today is Yale Hauptmann, and when we come back, he's going to finish answering that question and hopefully some of your questions, so I hope you will call in. And if you'd like to sign up for Yale's blog, go to elderlawtodaypodcast.com, and Yale's law firm can be found at www.hauptmann.com. And if you'd like to know more about me and generational coaching, you can go to my website, www.agewiseliving.com. And while you're there, I hope you will also sign up for my weekly newsletter. And I'd also love to hear from you, so please do email me with any comments, questions, or suggestions to Barbara@agewiseliving.com. And we will be right back.
News. Opinion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com, to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
How many of us haven't felt ripped off at one time or another? Don't you wish you had someplace to tune in for the answers? Join Jennifer Litwin every week on The Shop Cop. She'll take the time to explain real value and keep you away from the fraud that's out there in the shopping world. Jennifer has become the shopper's advocate, which means she can get you on the right track. Her guests are a who's who in the retail world. Don't get caught making a mistake in this down economy. Jennifer Litwin is here to help. The Shop Cop, live Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, and welcome back to AgeWise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we're talking with Yale Hauptmann, and he's giving us all kinds of really important information about elder law and how to help your aging loved one. And when we left, we were still talking about Medicaid planning, which is such an important topic.
Right, right. And Barbara, I started to explain, and your question was, well, you know, how long is that waiting period, if you give money to your family members, how long does that have to be sitting
burning
there?
Burning a hole in their pocket while they're waiting to spend it?
Well, yeah, exactly. What happens is you really have to think about making those gifts in two steps, because we don't know for as long as 5 years whether the donor, the elderly family member, is going to need that money or some of that money. So we have to put it somewhere to make sure that it's available to that person before we just gift it away. And I just want to also explain to your audience, because a lot of times I get the question after I give that explanation, they say, well, wait a second, hold on. Can't I give $13,000 per person per year, because that's under the gift tax rule. Aren't I okay in doing that? And my answer to that is, well, you are from a gift tax perspective, but from a long-term care perspective, that is a transfer that will deem you not eligible for government benefits, for Medicaid benefits. So you really have to be careful in doing that. And so the answer to how long must that money sit there before it can really be gifted out and used by the recipient is, it depends. It depends on where the funds are going to come from to pay for the elderly family member's long-term care. Sometimes they have other money, other assets. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they have long-term care insurance that can help bridge that gap. So really, the answer is it depends on the individual situation.
Okay. As with so many of these things, I guess that's really the answer, is it depends.
Well, yeah, the plan has to really be tailored, and the family has to understand that when their loved one reaches a certain stage of needing long-term care, it may not be nursing home care. It might be home care, and there's another excellent government program that can help bridge that gap. We have a lot of veterans in this country, and the VA has a program that's not very well publicized. Not a lot of folks know about it. It's called an aid in attendance program, and that can help bridge the gap to nursing home level care. And for a lot of folks, it can provide an additional pension that can be as much as almost $2,000 a month. But it has different rules. And so we can qualify somebody for that program, and that is also a needs-based program, but it doesn't have those penalty periods that Medicaid has. So you're thinking, okay, well, let me transfer the assets out because I can get the VA right away, and that's great, except that when you need the next level of care and you might need Medicaid down the road, that same transfer of assets that didn't pose a problem and got you the VA benefit right away can make you ineligible for the Medicaid benefit later on. So you have to be ready for that, because you can't just, you know, count on the fact, well, I won't need it, so I'm not going to worry about it. I'll worry about it when it happens. You can't, because of the way all these rules work.
And if the family doesn't plan ahead, now here's up till now we've been talking about keeping them out of the nursing home. If the family doesn't plan ahead and waits to call you until their loved one is already in a nursing home, is it too late for you to help then?
Not necessarily. And a lot of times what we can do is, first of all, if they have a certain level of assets, there may be things that we can do. There are also other specific rules, exceptions to the rules. So one of the things we want to do is we want to take a look at the situation and see, for example, are there disabled family members? Is there a spouse? There are excellent opportunities when we have a situation of a married couple and one spouse is in the nursing home and the other one isn't. There are still opportunities to try to protect and preserve as much for the healthy spouse as possible, because we really didn't talk about how those rules work, and we don't have time to go into great detail about it, but basically one of the objectives is we want to make sure that the healthy spouse, who typically is the wife, who might live another 10, 15, 20 years longer than the husband, for example, Medicaid doesn't leave a heck of a lot for that spouse. So what we can do oftentimes is we can stretch that amount and help to preserve more for the healthy spouse, because he or she may need it down the road. So there is, it always, always, Barbara, makes sense to contact somebody as soon as you can, even if your loved one is already in a nursing home.
Okay. There are other questions that I have for you that we really haven't gotten to, and I'm so sorry about that, but we're almost out of time. Would it be possible for me to send you some questions? And if any of our viewers or viewers, listeners have any questions, if you would email them to me at barbara@agewiseliving.com. And if we had some questions for you and I sent them to you, would you be willing to write some answers and I'll put them in my newsletter?
Absolutely, Barbara. By all means, if you get me those questions and I can answer them and put them in your newsletter. That'd be great.
That'd be terrific. And because I know I have more questions, and again, if you have any questions for Yale, please do send them to me at barbara@agewiseliving.com. And I'm really sorry to say that is all the time we have today. The time went really fast. And I really want to, again, thank my guest, Yale Hauptmann. You were wonderful.
Oh, my pleasure, Barbara. I really enjoyed it.
And I had a great time, and I want to remind you that you can sign up for Yale's newsletter by going to elderlawtodaypodcast.com. And you can sign up for my free newsletter by going to agewiseliving.com. And next week, we are going to have somebody who's going to be talking about Medicare, and he's somebody who actually makes it so that you can understand it. He's terrific. So I hope you will tune in next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. And in the meantime, this is your most appreciative host, Barbara Friesner. And I look forward to being with you next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific. And until then, have a terrific week and carpe diem. Seize the day.
We appreciate your joining us for AgeWise Living with host Barbara Friesner. Please tune in again next Tuesday morning at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, here on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.